Fantastic Volovsky.
Right, that's correct. Yeah, that's how I recognize your name.
Yes.
Okay, welcome back, Jeff Sachs here, Masechet Ta'anit. We are closing in on the end, but not as quickly as I had imagined. We're on Daf Kof Tet Amud Bet, 29b towards the top. The Gemara, as sometimes happens, once the Gemara introduces a statement of an Amora, it will then, piggyback or, link together other statements, whether or not those statements are thematically related. But it's just a way of kind of keeping the statements filed together. So the Gemara brings two different drashot, one on the pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Latet lochem achrit to give you a achrit, like achrit hayamim, to give you a sense of the.
No. The word means future, does not mean acharit hayamim.
No,
That's a mistranslation.
Yehudi, I didn't say it means achrit hayamim. I said like achrit hayamim means the future messianic era. Acharit means here the future. Let me finish the sentence before you correct me, because maybe I will correct myself before I get there. Acharit v'tikva, future and hope and hope for the future. So Omer of Yehuda bere de Rav Shmuel bar Shilat v'shmei de Rav elu de kalim v'chli pishtan. That in Bavel, the Jewish people were involved. Apparently, there's some evidence to this that there were different trades that the Jews during the Babylonian exile were involved in. One was the date trade. In other words, dates are in that world, in the ancient world, are big business. But there were a lot of date trees. They were used for all different types of things, not just eating the dates, but using the dates to make silan, to make date honey, and all types of other things that are done with dates. Jews are involved in dates and pishtan with linen clothing. These were things apparently that the Jews were gifted. Maybe it means that they were gifted with, like today we would say, I don't know, Jews are given high tech and pickles. I don't know, whatever things that are considered to be distinctly Jewish professions. And both of these things are considered to be long lasting. Date trees, of course, last a long time. The dates themselves, when they're dried, are kind of long lasting foodstuffs that can be stored away. Linen clothing was considered to be, I think today it might not have this image. Linen clothing is often considered to be very delicate, but linen clothing was considered to be long lasting. Particularly because it resisted stains in certain ways that other types of cloth didn't. So these were symbols of kind of the ability to withstand, and that's the blessing to the Jewish people in exile, that kind of ability to withstand. And then a second drasha, Vayomer re'eh reach b'ni kereach sadeh asher. Berachu Hashem. That is, of course, a pasuk from
She's passionate.
this week's parsha. This week's parsha. Yitzchak come. Yeah, Yitzchak. I don't know why. It's like one of those things, where there's something corrupted in the file. Whenever I'm going to end up speaking on Parshat Toldot about Yitzchak and Yaakov, I inevitably will reverse them. I'll say Yitzchak when I mean Yaakov, and Yaakov when I mean Yitzchak. It's like a curious memory defect. Yaakov comes dressed, disguised as Esav. Yitzchak gives the bracha and says, "Oh my goodness, the smell of my son is like the smell of the field blessed by Hashem, blessed by God." I'll explain that pasuk in a minute. Let's finish the drasha. How do we learn this? Because in other words, Yaakov wore the hairy, cloak the clothes of Esav so that blind Yitzchak would be fooled, but also the clothing gave off the smell. Rashi says that Rashi says something interesting. What do you think the pshat of Kireach HaSodeh is? What do you think?
I think Esav, when it was an Ish Sayed Ish Sadeh, and Yitzchak was also an Ish Sadeh, he's the only one of the three Avot that actually got involved with agriculture in a serious way and basically actually got tevuah from his work. And so we have a father who's an Ish Sadeh, who is about to bless his son who's an Ish Sadeh. And of course, at that moment, he smells something which clearly, without any question, communicates how much time his son spends in the Sadeh.
And also, of course, like the evocative nature of smell, particularly for somebody who's probably retired from his farming a long time because of his condition. He's in bed, he's blind. It's like, you know, the nostalgia, you know, like we all have, you know, like...
The smell gets better when he's blind, not worse.
The smell gets improved. His senses
of course,
gets improved.
Your other senses get better.
Right. But no, but in other words, the, like, you know, like,
you've been away from a place that you remember, and you remember the smells associated with that place. Could be summer camp. It could be wherever.
Right. No, but like it happened, like how often, like, you know, like there's that smell. We don't really get it here, but like in America, you know, that smell before the rain.
Yeah.
Right? It always brings me back to like summer nights in when I was a kid. Or the smell of
the smell of
like freshly brewed coffee on the stovetop, you know, where it's really good and thick. That was the smell of my grandparents' home. There was always coffee percolating in my grandparents' home. They were well caffeinated people. So there are certain smells that the sense of nostalgia that's connected to I mean, you know, Proust's Madeleines, you know, in memory of
that's a great literary allusion. That's right on
the Madeleine and the tea, and how like it unlocks the or if you saw that, what was that cartoon? Ratatouille, that Pixar movie, right? The same thing with the food critic tastes the peasant food of the ratatouille, and it brings him back to his mother's, you know, farmhouse kitchen or whatever it is. But Rashi says, "Vayarach, v'halo ein reach ra yoter mishetef ha'izim." What did he smell like? He smelled like he hung out with goats, right? You know, goats stink. So that was the smell. So Rashi says, but that wasn't the smell. Ela milamed shenichnasa imo reach gan Eden. It was the smell of Gan Eden. It's Yaakov puts on Esav's clothing, and instead of the stinky goat smell, what reach hasadeh? Not the physical reach hasadeh, but the metaphysical sadeh. Kareach sadeh asher berachu Hashem. Natan bo reach tov, v'zeh sadeh tapuchim, an apple orchard. V'chein darshu rabuseinu zal. So where's Rashi quoting from? Rashi on this week's parasha. I want you to help me think about it. I started thinking about this afternoon because I have to speak on Shabbat. So I thought about speaking about this. Like learning the Gemara for our encounter now gave me thoughts of what I could say on Shabbat. So Sharon, it's a good thing you don't have to feel you're going to miss out by not stepping foot in that shul, because you'll hear it now. But I don't have it all worked out. I want you to think it through together. It's a bad
tapuchim
smell.
Tapuchim is found in a Tanakh six times, four just in Shir HaShirim alone.
Tapuchim.
They're clearly very aromatic. It says, V'reach apech the tapuchim.
Right, well, again.
A lot more than they are today, because today the apple that's grown has been grafted and worked on and nothing
right.
like
that. But even that, in other words, think of, again, to go back to the nostalgic power of memory, you know, you remember apple picking as a kid, right? In the fall, like that smell of the apples, the apple cider afterwards. There is a certain smell to a fresh apple Not like the waxy apple that comes all sanitized in the supermarket. But if we assume that the apple that Shir Shirim is talking about is, you know, what we call apples, but we'll right. see in a moment that might not right. be.
I have some linguistic insights into what the actual apple likely was, but we can get to
your... So hold off on that. We'll okay. come back to it. You know, of course, that the idea that the apple in Gan Eden, in other words, here's an interesting thing. We know, I mean, according to our tradition, there is no authentic Jewish source that identifies the pre-Eitz Hadat as an apple. Hazal,
tapuach.
As tapuach.
It's very important. Tapuach. That's a very important distinction.
As tapuach or as what we call an apple. Right? The almost universal visual image of Adam and Eve reaching for what we call an apple, or it's always a red, delicious apple. It's not, you know, it's never like a Granny Smith or a Macintosh. It's always like a big, red, delicious apple. Is of course from medieval Christian art. Why did when we, you know, it's fascinating. Of course, you know, the Torah says this pre Eitz Hadat, and they eat this fruit. The Torah could have done us a favor and painted us a picture and told us what the fruit was, but because the identity of the fruit is left blank, this leaves room for. I said this recently. I was a guest someplace, and I gave a shiur, and I referred to it as the rabbinic imagination. And people were offended by this because they thought it was disrespectful. But I think it's the perfect description of the rabbinic imagination. Not imagination meaning imaginary, but imagination meaning the mental effort that's put into trying to decipher a text which you are so in love with that you're not prepared to let it go. You're not prepared to leave any vacuum or to leave any two lines not read between. So the rabbinic imagination has to fill in that blank. If there's such an important visual, physical object that's used in that scene of the Chet Eitz Hadat, we must know what it is. So, of course, you know, the Midrash fills in various possibilities. It was grapes. It was an etrog. It was wheat. It was figs. Why would they guess figs of all things?
Because
it's right there. It's the only other type of tree that's explicitly named. So it's not such a stretch to imagine that the fruit and the leaves came from the same tree. Why etrog? Like, why might you think it's an etrog?
Well, it's very attractive
smelling. In other words, if the Satan wants to seduce Chava into eating a fruit, and then he's going to pick one that's enticing yeah. both in appearance, taste, and smell. That's the best one thing to pick. The most enticing fruit is the etrog.
So also there's also a linguistic hint there in that the idea of the phrase lakach pri, the combination of that right. verb and that noun only appears.
There's a linguistic hekshir.
It only appears very few times in the old right, Torah, and that's right. one of them. Talks about the right.
But also, in other words, when Chazal say, look, the Torah tells us there's a fruit, it can't be that it's just any old fruit. It has to be a distinguished fruit. So let's call down to central casting, right? You know, Torah central casting. Say, what fruit do we have hanging around here in the Bible? Well, there's only one fruit that we do a mitzvah with. And that's the etrog. The etrog is like the leading man of the fruit. Remember the Fruit of the Loom guys, the Fruit of the Loom actors, you know, for that commercial? Remember that commercial? Yeah. Right? So in the Jewish version of those guys dressed up in fruit costumes, in the Torah version of that, the etrog is the leading man. So it makes sense that that might be something that...
Tosfot.
And we're going to look at that Tosfot in 1 second. This is going to take us a few minutes to try to work through this. Why, by the way, do the Christians identify it with a red, delicious apple?
So, for what I know, there are two reasons. I think one is
okay.
the common explanation. The explanation that I think is more likely. The common.
Why don't you give the one that's more likely, and I'll give the common one.
Okay, so I think the more likely one is that apple did not originally mean the specific fruit that we refer to as apple today. It just meant fruit. We see that in French and German. You know, it didn't use it for all kinds of Hebrew is certainly from German and French. It's not right. It wasn't an original thing. Right. And so I think, you know, it could have been that it said fruit. And, you know, that was the thing. And then eventually when it was became the more precise term, people thought, oh, well, that must be the apple, and that would be the cause. That's the theory that I think is more likely. You can go on with the other.
So the more clever one, which may or may not be right, is that it's a visual pun. In Latin, the word for apple, malum, is a homonym for the word for ra, malevolent, right?
Malcontent, well, yeah.
Malcontent, malevolent, malefactor, right? We see it from the Latin root passed into English. So it's just, they're just homonyms. The words are not etymologically related, but they sound alike. Apple and evil in Latin are homonyms. So it's a kind of visual midrash. What's the fruit of tov v'ra, right? Of tov v'apple, right? So that's one theory behind it, which is, I think, quite charming. Now this Gemara says, Omer of Yehuda, kerech etz tapuchim. So there's another Gemara in Shabbat. Shabbat daf peichet omud aleph. The Gemara says, Omar Rabbi Elazar. This is a Gemara that's talking about Matan Torah, about Naseh v'Nishma, about Naseh v'Nishma. Hold on a second. This is wrong. Oh, here's the Gemara. The Gemara is a string of Gemaras about Matan Torah and Naseh v'Nishma. So the Gemara says, Omar Rabbi Elazar, b'shas shehekdimu Yisrael na'aseh l'nishma. At the moment that the Jewish people preempted, we will listen with we will do, yatzta bat kol v'amra lahem, mi gila l'vanai raz zeh shemalachei asharet mishtamshim bo. Oh my goodness, where did the Jewish people come up with this Naseh v'nishma, which is kind of like the secret code of the Malachei Hasharet. Who revealed this secret to them? Dichtiv, Baruch Hashem Malachav, Giborei Koach Osei Dvaro. Blessed are the angels who do God's will, do God's word. Lishmoa Bechol Dvaro. To listen to the sound of his voice. So in that pasuk, it's a pasuk in Tehillim, it shows that the Malachim first do Naseh and then do Nishma. It says first they Osei Dvaro, they do his will, and then they listen to his voice. So where did the Jewish people figure out that this is the way to do it? Bereisha Osei v'Adai Lishmo. Amar Rebbi Chama b'Rebbi Chanina, my dichtiv. Right, so where did the Jewish people come up with Naseh v'Nishma from? This secret that only the angels are meant to know? From a pasuk in Shir Shirim, Ketapuach ba'atzei hayar, like an apple tree in the forest. Lama nimshlu Yisrael etapuach? So why are the Jewish people compared to an apple or to an apple tree? Lomar lacha ma tapuach ze. Piryo kodem la'alav, af Yisrael hekdimu naseh l'nishma. I don't understand the botany of it, but apparently the way apple trees work, or the way apple trees used to work before they were altered with, Yehudi pointed out that apples as we know it have undergone tremendous botanological variation. They've been grafted and crafted and manipulated to be the apples that we know. But that's not what apples in nature or how they are or how they worked. As a matter of fact, there's a really interesting article, which, you know, over the years, I've mentioned this article a couple of times. It's come up in a lot of different ways. It was an old article in the New Yorker about ancient varieties of apples and other fruit trees that are highly endangered. And there's this one person in Italy that, like, basically has an orchard keeping them alive. In other words, we live in kind of like monocultures, right? There's like a half a dozen types of apples. There's only one kind of banana, right? Every banana that we eat is called a Cavendish banana. And there used to be dozens of banana varieties, but because the Cavendish banana, you know, what we think of as banana, is the most profitable. It's the biggest. It's the easiest to grow. It has the longest shelf life. You know, even though here in Israel, there's always, you know, here's an imitation of an Israeli banana. Green, 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 yellow, brown, yellow, brown, black. Right. But those bananas, there's a problem because there's some kind of blight that's affecting them. And if they should go under, we'll be stuck because we've let all the other banana varieties go extinct, more or less, because of the monoculture of things. So that, but there used to be all types of species of apples and of citrus fruits and other things that, because they're less profitable, because they have less shelf life, or they're harder to farm or to bring from farm to table. So they've basically gone extinct. And there's this one person in Italy who, like, keeps these varieties alive. It's really, really interesting. So apples, the way we have them, have been greatly genetically manipulated. But in nature, at least the Gemara seems to say that the way the apple works is that that the fruit blossoms, the blossoms come and turn into the fruit before the leaves. In other words, what happens is that the leaves on the tree stay from year to year. And then the leaves fall off. And then the plant, the tree blossoms and produces the apples. And then the new leaves come. So which is not the way plants normally do it. The plants normally need their leaves to produce the photosynthesis to feed the tree and to get the sugar going and to make the fruit. But apples do it the other way, meaning basically what they do is they do the asiya, the na'aseh, the action, the real event of being a tree is to produce fruit. That's na'aseh, and that comes first. So why are the Jewish people compared to an apple tree? Because apple trees exhibit this quality of na'aseh v'nishma, of action comes first, the person comes first. So Tosfot here, you see this Tosfot says, I'm not sure how this all works. Right? But that's not important for us. But what is important for us is, what does he say? Shehare anu ro'im shegadel b'shari lanot mefarish de tapuach hainu. What is it? Tapuach doesn't mean apple. I mean tapuach in Tanakh. Tapuach in Shir HaShirim. Tapuach.
It's not just in Shir HaShirim. It's in two other places too.
Tapuachei
Zahav, Maskiyot Kesef. In other words, I have serious doubts in any possible, in anyone who's trying to tell me that a tapuach is an etrog. I didn't even take that Tosafot seriously.
Yecholiot, but since Tosafot went to the trouble to say it, I'm going to show Tosafot the honor of actually reading what he says, and we'll note your objection, Yehudi. Tosafot says X. Yehudi disagrees. We'll leave it to the
judges. First time.
We'll leave it to the judges. We'll leave it to the judges' ruling.
Remember, Tosfot, you told me I was disagreeing with the Rambam when all I was doing was saying what Tanakh disagrees with the Rambam.
Yehudi, Mela, you disagree with me. But here, in fact, you are. Let's go on record. You are disagreeing with Tosfot. But Tosfot says that tapuach means etrog. V'reach hapecha ketapuchim mitargaminan. Kirecha de etruga, right? And this is not just Tosfot you're disagreeing with; it's the Targum.
Well, there's a note there. Maybe you got there. No, I
want to. All right, David, fill us in.
No, the Torah Tamima, is that where you're heading with? Daniel Torah?
Go ahead. The Torah Tzavim says we're unaware what the source for this is.
And therefore he says maybe it was a mistake. It shouldn't be Metargamim. It should be Medarshanim. And then goes back to our
Gemara. Find out if any Targum says that.
Okay.
He couldn't find it.
A few minutes.
To say that, but Tosfot thought that it was the Targum.
Or it was a mistake, and he meant the Drush. Like I said,
it was a mistake.
Well, but it would make a big difference, because if you're tying Tosafot, then you know that's not the same as finding it in the Targum. Okay, if you find that in the Targum, it means it's...
Well, I don't know. I mean, if according to Torah Tumim's answer, that it's the Drusha from the Gemara, the Gemara, I think, is just as much of a, at least for Tosafot's consideration, it's just as much a reliable source of the Targum.
Yep. So in all cases, this idea of what would it mean to put it all together? Like, what does this mean? The Gemara in Ta'anit. Notice this pasuk has nothing to do with our parasha. This Gemara in Shabbat has nothing to do with our parasha. But the Gemara in Ta'anit, let's go back to the Gemara in Ta'anit. The Gemara in Ta'anit, where are we here? The Gemara in Ta'anit says, the Gemara Ta'anit says that's the pasuk. The pasuk that Yitzchak blesses Yaakov, thinking that it's Esav, presumably thinking, according to the Pshuto Shel Mikra, Yitzchak is fooled, right? There are shitot, of course, that he understands that Yaakov is putting on a show. And perhaps it's once he sees that Yaakov is capable of actually getting something done, that Yaakov is able to possess some of the qualities of Esav, that's when he's destined to receive the bracha. But even according to Pshuto Shel Mikra, that Yitzchak is fooled and he gives Esav's bracha to Yaakov, disguised as Yaakov. What's this idea of the smell? So this is smell. Oh, it smells like it. Sure, smells like Esav. Sure, does smell like Esav, right? Either because he smells like goat, or because he smells
Wait a minute. The bit with the goat, also, you have to be careful, Rabbi Sack. First, it says that she put on Bigdei Esav HaChamudot. Now, those weren't goat skins. Those were deer skins, which is what you use to write a Sefer Torah. You know, then it seems on top of that, she put the goat skins. And these already are not goat skins that are just coming straight from a goat. They've been tanned, hided, and, you know, they go all the malachot. They're forbidden on Shabbat. Is how you get yourself
If these are his...
They don't smell bad.
Well, how do you know? Maybe they smell bad.
Skin definitely does not smell bad.
No, but in other
JPS
words...
JPS says so.
The JPS
says so, and that's a good authority.
But if you wear the nicest clothing, and you wear that nice clothing into a tannery or into a brewery, and then you go home, your clothing is going to smell like what you do for a living.
But if you took it off the hook. Asa wasn't even in the house. She took her off the
and they were still in the plastic wrap from the dry cleaner.
No, but they were sitting there because Esav was wearing something else that day. Point being that she's putting those clothes on Dafka because they smell like deer and the game. That's it. That's the word I want. Game. Right. G-A-M-E in English. It's got that smell that you're out in the middle of the fields hunting. And that's what Yaakov wants. Okay.
Yecholiot, but that's not what Rashi says. Now, you're against Tosfot, you can also go against the Zaydi. You can also go against the Zaydi and say that you're against Rashi also. But I'm interested in explaining what Rashi here says. If you'll give me a moment, I'll try to get to the end of this. What does it mean that he smells like Gan Eden, which smells like Tapuchim, which, by the way, is another way to conflate, to introduce Etrog as a stand-in for Tapuach.
It's worth noting, just in response to what Yehudi said, in terms of Rashi, that Rashi has a very, very strong anti-Esav. Like, anytime he can say anything bad about Esav, he's going to do it. So yeah. It's possible that he would say, you know, Esav really smelled terrible. You know, he's not going to pass the opportunity as compared to Yaakov, who's going to smell like Gan Eden. You know, this is not an unusual thing for Rashi, who has a megamah for, is a reason for doing this kind of this particular interpretation.
Perhaps because it's extended to saying nasty things about Christians.
Exactly.
I searched the Targum, all of them. Okay.
I understand. You don't have to. Yehudi. Enough. We take it for granted that it doesn't exist.
I just wanted to tell you what they do say. They do say, they create, most of them say, Reach Sadeh is Kareach Ketoret B'Simane. That's basically what they say. That's Yehonatan, that's okay. That's the thing I think you should know.
Yehudi, that's the only reason.
Yehudi,
I'm going to ask you to let me get to the end now and to please hold off with any further comments. Okay?
You got it.
Rav Kook in the Ein Ayah, examining the examining this Haggadah in Masechet Shabbat, he says a whole variety of things. And you know, with Rav Kook, sometimes you have to make your way through a certain amount of what he's saying in order to get at what he's saying. But he says the point of that Gemara in Shabbat, which is trying to explain Naseh v'Nishma, that the apple, which may be an apple, or it may be an etrog, or it may be any other stand-in for whatever fruit, but it is the smell, according to Rashi, it is the smell of what's happening between Yaakov and Yitzchak / Esav, is connected to Naaseh v'Nishma. Rav Kook says, Ze erech Yisraeli miyuchad shnitan la'am segula. This is a particularly Jewish value or trait which is given to the chosen nation. Sheha'asiya hi b'ze ha'erech hayoter elyon mikol erkei hayichusim ha'mitzvatiim ha'toratiim v'amusarim. Action is the most important value. Within the value scheme of what he calls mitzvot and Torah and musar, action is what happens. Na'aseh, asiya, takes place before nishma. It's of course reminiscent. He doesn't mention this, of course, but the machloket and kedushin about what's more, you know, it's like one of these types of Talmudic arguments. What's more important, limud or ma'aseh? So we give the most Jewish of all answers. The answer is really both, right? We split the difference. Limud has precedent. Learning, study takes precedent only because it's actualized in action, right? All study has that kind of at least potential actualization. Even study, even limud, which has no, momentarily has no practical application. Because let's say you're learning Zvachim, and Zvachim, you know, we can't do it right now because there's no Beit HaMikdash, right? But it's at least in potential practical. But today it's not practical. Yesterday wasn't practical. Maybe tomorrow it will be. And when we do study things that have no practical application, the study itself becomes a kind of stand-in for, you're not just doing something hypothetical. Right, it has practical import because the study itself takes the place of the action, which we cannot do now. And this is true for everything, for mitzvot, for Torah, which I assume he means, you know, kind of limud, learning, and for musar, for ethics. Right, ethics mean nothing in the abstract, but it's only a question of whether or not they can be put into practice, put into action. So Naaseh v'Nishma is the kind of thing which puts the Jewish people on the scale of the angels, because it shows a commitment to actualizing in this world the halacha. You know, this is of course the great theme of Rabbi Soloveitchik's halachic man, right? That this world is the world in which the Torah, the halacha, is actualized. But I thought that this now can be read back into the Gemara in Ta'anit. Gemara in Ta'anit, which says that the Reach HaSadeh is
Tapuchim.
Is the Tapuchim, is the Gan Eden, right? Because, and that's why Yaakov is victorious. Because what is the bracha? How does Yitzchak make this determination to give the bracha? Either give the bracha to who he thought was Esav, or give the bracha according to this non-pshat explanation given by some midrashim that he now understands this is Yitzchak. Yitzchak disguised as Yaakov. Yitzchak disguised as Esav. Yaakov, damn it. There I did it again. Yaakov disguised as Esav, but finally proving himself worthy of the bracha because he's taking action. And that's the point. Hakol kol Yaakov v'hayadayim yedei Esav. Yitzchak has two points of data. The kol Yaakov and the yadayim yedei Esav. But he paskins, well, must be Esav. Let's give him the bracha. So why does he do that? Why doesn't he say, Hakol kol Yaakov, yadayim yedei Esav, sounds like Yaakov, I'll give him the Yaakov bracha. Why do the hands take precedent over the voice? Because what's voice? Voice is nishma. Hands are na'aseh. And na'aseh always trumps nishma. And therefore, since he appears to have the actions, the hands, the na'aseh of Esav, he gets that bracha. Or Yitzchak understands that this really is Yaakov, who finally is able to demonstrate his ability to get things done. Right? You know, the antithesis of the idea of the Ish Tam Yoshev Ohalim, right? You know, somebody who can't accomplish anything, somebody who's only in the a Luftmensch, the ivory tower, you know, the Yoshev Beit HaMidrash that doesn't know anything about the practical world. When he shows he's able to put out, then he becomes the worthy inheritor of Gan Eden, of the brachot. Okay, that's all I have to say about this. We can go on a drop. Oh, that was a lot of time. There's a lot of time for four lines.
There's a couple of so one thing just about the biblical tapuach. I wrote about this a while back. You can look up Balashon and Tapuach. You'll see what I wrote. The likely candidate for the biblical tapuach is actually probably the apricot, because as Yudi pointed out, Tupuch only appears a few times in the Tanakh, and it has certain qualities, and one of them is being sweet. That's mentioned in Sher Sherim, and the Etrog is not sweet. That's one of the reasons why they disqualified even the possibility of an Etrog, let alone when it was introduced into Eretz Yisrael. But apricot fits all the qualities of what the likely fruit was, and also they say that
Who says this?
This is biblical botanists who, I don't know if Felix also agrees with this, but this is a book called Plants of the Bible, Harold and Alma Moldenke. And, you know, it seemed to be like, at least to me, it seemed convincing when I wrote about it. They also noted that there wasn't, that what we call apples weren't common in this part of the world at that time. So that was not a likely, right. A likely category. So it's just interesting that might have been the case. If it's the type, also it's tall tree, it's a pleasant shade. All the different things you can find in the thing. So anyway, if you want, you can see my quoting of their book in my post about Tapuach. And I think, by the way, if I followed correctly, I think what you already quoted, which actually connects back to what you said earlier, maybe quoted from the JPS, but actually we found in the Ramban. If you look at the Ramban on Breishit Chaf Hey Lamed Dalet, he quotes the Gemara also. And I think what he's saying there is that basically, like, Rivka gave him these clothes, but they put these spices on him, and they said because he was the man of the field, he got the sense of the odors of the field. That can also, in other words, if Yaakov is a Yoshev Olim, even just to go outside, he wouldn't get the smell of the nice trees. That's what Ramban seems to be saying is going on here. He says it's the smell of Eretz Yisrael. He doesn't talk about Gan Eden. He talks about Eretz Yisrael. The smell of all these pleasant trees growing in Eretz Yisrael, that's what Esav would come back with just because he was hunting in the field. And if Yaakov was a Yoshev Olim, he wasn't going to get those nice smells. So that, if you want to look at that Ramban, maybe that Ramban would be a helpful
I can give you a source for what you just said, David. It's a book called Plants in the Hebrew Bible, Garden of Eden, by Gloria Fallon. And she says tapuah can be translated both as apple and as apricot. And for apricot, she brings rapduni betafuchim. Okay? For apple, she brings tapuah ba'aseayah. Okay? The other point, Rav Sacks, is there is one targum. It's a fragment margin from the Neophiti targum that actually says Gan Eden is what it smells like. Okay, I'll read you the Hebrew or the Aramaic. It says, "Dinta dinetziva," in other words, that's translated as Gan Eden. So, in other words, the idea that this was reminded Yaakov Avinu of something from Gan Eden, that might go back to earlier Midrashim, and I think that might remember this Ramora we're quoting now is probably a contemporary of Bereishit Rabbah. So the idea was probably going around at that time that apple was something reminded of the smell of Gan Eden. That's perfectly plausible.
So here, I'll fill you in. I didn't know that about the apricots. Lani will be delighted. My wife will be delighted. Apricots are her favorite. So in Agdon's Tmol Shel Shom, his great epic novel of the second Aliyah, so he describes, the Olim that come from Poland and from Galicia and from Russia and where not, they come to Eretz Yisrael. And Eretz Yisrael, despite all of the longing that we had for Eretz Yisrael from abroad, we didn't really know what it was like up close. People, there's a description, people coming, not realizing how hot it was here. And the food is different and all those other things. So there's a scene where early in the book, this is on page 81 in the old edition, the narrator says, "Ad shelo banu le'eretz Yisrael, mishmish." Mishmish haya. Harimon befinu kemashal, right? Things like apricots and rimonim, pomegranates. It was. Oh, no way! I'm sorry. This is the wrong quote. Where is it?
Neshiva b'chakma de'eden. That's what I'm reading.
I lost it. I lost the quote. I thought this was it. I had a marker by this. Yeah, it's a different point. Where he says, "Ad shebanu le'eretz Yisrael, lo hikarnu mishmash." We never had apricots in Galicia. We never heard of such a thing. When we came to Eretz Yisrael, we saw there was mishmash. When do the mishmashim come? Bizman shetapuchei hazahav nikalim min hashuk. When orange season is over and there are no more. It's not like today. We can get fruit. I was in a makolet yesterday, and they were still selling fresh figs, right? And as it used to be, that fig season here lasted about 6 weeks. But now you can get fresh figs. You have to pay for them, just like you can get blueberries here, all year long. And they're cheaper than they used to. It used to be you'd have to mortgage your house to get blueberries, even in season. Now you can get blueberries it's expensive, but you can afford it all year long. So Agdon says that when we came, Terry says, so we never heard of mishmish. When does the apricot season begin? When the oranges disappear from the shuk. Biyad echad unotenu v'yad echad hu lokeach. Right? When God compensates us with the good apricots when he takes away the oranges. And he says, more God does for us more than he promised. What did he promise us? He promised us chita u'sara v'gefen v'tein avrim on the shivat aminim, right? And he gives us more than he promised because he also gives us the mishmishim. He also gives us the apricots.
I have a modern version of that story where I had in Garvin, California. I had a friend of mine was we studied in public school Hebrew and we had a teacher but this friend of mine originally was from Russia, and when we got to studying, they're teaching us the names of the fruits. Yeah, the teacher was telling us that the grapefruit was called eshkolit, and my friend was shocked. He said, "That's the same word in Russian for grapefruit." which clearly is not the case. But what happened was my friend had immigrated in one of the earlier waves of the Aliyah when they let the Jews leave in the early 70s. His parents came to Israel. They stayed here for a year or two. They couldn't make do economically, and they went to the States. So they had never seen, like Aglon, they'd never seen an eshkolit before. They never saw grapefruit. So like they spoke Russian at home the way we speak English, but they saw this fruit. They didn't know what to call it. So they called it eshkolit in their Russian. He spoke at home. So all the Russian he got was from his parents. He thought when they're speaking Russian about everything else, he thought that eshkolit was Russian.
I found the quote. It's two pages out. It's on page 79. Hana'ag muran hena Yitzchak min ha-mishmashim. Yitzchak had great delight from the apricots. Lo lamadnu aleihem b'chumash, v'lo shamanu aleihem ad shelo banu la'eretz Yisrael. We never heard about apricots in the Chumash, right? In the Chumash, they knew about rimonim, which they probably didn't have much of in Galicia. V'lo shamanu aleihem ad shelo banu la'eretz Yisrael. We never even heard of apricots until we got to Eretz Yisrael. This is a story taking place in the first decade of the 20th century. Pitom niglu aleinu. Suddenly they were revealed to us. The Hare Heim Tovim Mushubachim. They are good and praiseworthy and blessed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ohev Et Eretz Yisrael V'notein Yoter Mishe Mavtiach. God loves the land of Israel and grants it even more than he promised. Hivtiach Lanu Eretz Chita U'Sara V'chule U'mosif V'notein Shar Perot Tovim Minaim. He promised the seven species and he gives even extra good and beautiful fruits. The Ematai Hunotain, when does he give the apricots? Bein Pesach Latzeret, between Passover and Shavuot. Bizman Shetapuche Azahav Kalum en Ashuk, when the oranges have disappeared from the marketplace, the apricots come. Biado Achat Lokeach, Biado Achat Notain.
So, a team for Sher Sherim. If Sher Sherim is talking about this, if Sher Sherim is discussing things that are going on in the spring, that's it's very much that the apricot would be the fruit that would be, you know, if the apples are apricots and Sher Sherim, then that would be a good season for it.
Mentions all kinds of things that are not mentioned in the Torah. So that's a, in other words, looking at a Torah, you would never, ever imagine the type of variegated nature that you see in Sher Sherim. The number of various species of fruits and spices. And I mean, the drash that Sher Sherim's garden has got Eden is supported to some extent by the text of that book. Because
the Gemara here continues on Daf Kaf Ted Amud Beis with, actually, it's kind of ironic. Finally, we get to what, if I had tasked you all to do an unseen, when we began this shiur 80 some odd shiurim ago, what topics do you think we're going to encounter in Masechet Ta'anit? If you imagine for a second you were coming to a tabula rasa, you probably would have said, well, like the halachot of fast days, right? Which fast days as we know them, not this stuff about the rain and the ma'amadot and all this other stuff. And only now with, a daf and a half left, do we get to the halachot of laundering during the 9 days before Tisha B'Av, which is, you know, a pretty straightforward fast day type, fast day season type halacha. So it's a rather technical Gemara that goes through. It also, of course, is preempted by the fact that we know what the halacha lama'aseh is. Of course, the halacha lama'aseh is a little more stringent than many of the opinions presented in the Gemara about prohibition to launder clothing during the 9 days from Rosh Chodesh Av until Tisha B'Av. But perhaps if I'm able, I'll record this as another kind of standalone mini shiur, so that next time we'll be able to pick up when it's concluded. And we will, let me just double check the calendar. Next week we should have shiur. The week after is the night before the wedding. I hope we'll also have shiur that night, but we'll have to play that by ear. And I hope that by Hanukkah, willy-nilly, if I have to give a marathon shiur to finish everything, by Hanukkah we're finishing Masechet Ta'anit, and we'll take off for Hanukkah, and after Hanukkah we will pick up. Maybe we'll have a siyum then. We'll work it out. We'll figure out how we are doing that. Okay, Laila Tov.
Laila Tov.
Yisrael Kol Chacharav.
Thank you.
Oh, good evening.